Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I hope you folks got a chance to listen to my show last week with Diane Troutman, the county clerk. She's in charge of voting. And I think, in spite of some technical glitches, it was a great show. I think she gave a lot of terrific information. I heartily recommend that if you did not listen to that show, if you don't go back and listen to any of the archives of my show, go back to that one. You can either listen to it on KPFT. Actually, it's archive.kpft.org. will take you directly to the list of shows that we have archived. They're on for about 60 days. It's also on my site at thinkwingradio.com. And for today's show, I've added a link to that show. So a lot of ways you can listen. Doing my civic duty, remember that May 4th, there is an election for surrounding municipalities in Harris County, not Houston itself. HarrisVotes.com is how you get information on that. If you have elections outside of Harris County, you can go to VoteTexas.gov. And if you're outside of Texas, you can go to Vote.org. So there are all kinds of ways for you to make sure you vote. Let's try to do like more than a 2% turnout on these off elections. Okay, let's try to get to 10, 20%. I don't know. Is that too ambitious? Anyway. Okay. A comment that I, and by the way, this will be an open forum. You can call 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. I want to make a comment. You know, people joke about the fact that, metaphorically speaking, it seems like everybody in the Democratic Party is running for president. Well, statistically, that's not true, or technically at about 20. There may be some people considering it, and some of the 20 are not going to be seriously likely candidates. But, you know, people joke about it. And I feel that I want to comment on this. I think that the vast majority of these 20 candidates are smart, capable people. They each have their own experiences to draw from, their own ideas to draw from, various abilities to articulate those ideas, to respond to questions, to listen to people that talk to them and sort of formulate new things. And here's the thing, you know, as they say in some fantasy novels, in the end, there can only be one. And that's true. So out of these 20 more or less candidates, in the end, there's only going to be one nominee. But the benefit of having this many smart, articulate candidates of different genders, different ethnicities, different educational backgrounds, different experiential backgrounds, at the end, we are going to have a nominee who will have, I'm going to use the term loosely, a platform, but basically conceptually an idea of what they want to do when they're elected. I'm going to be optimistic. And they will have the opportunity to synthesize that conceptual framework from all of the different ideas that have been put forward. Some are good, some are not great, some are silly, but all of them are food for thought, right? So don't make fun of the fact that there are 20 Democratic candidates. Be happy that of the 20 Democratic candidates, so many of them are, at the end of the day, worthy of being president. Smart, capable, experienced. There are people I'm not preferring, but, you know, whoever the nominee is, that's where I'm going. And, of course, it's worth noting, KPFT is a nonpartisan educational 501c3 organization. Okay, so there's that. Open forum, 713-526-5738. There's an article in the LA Times, and I think that there have been other sources for it. Democrats blast Attorney General William Barr, calling him Trump's, quote, paid federal public defender. In a scheduled back-to-back congressional hearing this week, Democrats will have their first chance to grill Barr since he stood at the Department of Justice podium on April 18th and repeatedly declared that Special Counsel Mueller had found no collusion between Trump and the Kremlin-backed operation. Democrats and former prosecutors are baffled by Barr's recent description of court-authorized eavesdropping in 2016 as spying, as opposed to surveillance, the politically loaded term Trump uses to characterize the Justice Department and Obama administration. Jamie Raskin, representative from Maryland, Democrat, a member of House Judiciary, questioned whether Barr had secretly, quote, signed on as a paid federal public defender for President Trump. Apparently, Barr's objection to the House and Senate is some of the representatives and senators want their some of their staffers to be able to question him, and he objects to that. And Gerald Nadler of New York is saying it's not the witness's job to tell Congress how they are going to question a person testifying before Congress. It's also worth noting that the Republicans were perfectly happy to have an outside lawyer question, I think it was Kavanaugh, or Kavanaugh's accuser. So, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Precedents matter. Just like elections, precedents matter, which is why it always pays when you're a legislator to be careful what you say is okay to do, because it can come back and bite you in the butt, or all of us in the butt, for that matter. This is good news. FBI Director Christopher Wray has stated that the FBI and Department of Homeland Security task forces to address election security are now permanent. This would seem to contradict Trump's statements that there's nothing to see here. Move along. And then in New York, Trump accuses New York Attorney General Letitia James of illegally investigating the NRA, because I think that from the Trump point of view, any investigation is illegal. Any investigation of him, it's like there's an exception in every law written except Trump, except Trump, except Trump. Let's see. So President Trump on Monday accused New York's attorney general of illegally investigating the NRA and called on the group, which has been roiled by a leadership fight, to, quote, get its act together quickly. Again, quoting, the NRA is under siege by Cuomo and the New York State AG, who are illegally using the state's legal apparatus to take down and destroy this very important organization and others, Trump wrote in a tweet, quote, it must get its act together quickly. Stop the internal fighting and get back to Upper Cap's greatness fast. Okay, whatever. Just as a point of information, two U.S. Navy warships sailed through the Taiwan Strait in a freedom of navigation exercise. China, of course, not excited. Okay, let's go ahead and take a couple of calls. The phone number is 713-526-5738. 713-526-5738. We do have open lines. And first up is Scott. Scott, you're on the air. How you doing?
Yeah, thank you. Fine, yeah. You know why I'm not so excited about sending Donald Trump to prison? Well, I don't.
Well, there goes the neighborhood.
Prisons. But seriously, I think it is more important to discredit him and his party, especially with the coming generation, the generation that's coming to vote. Nelson Mandela went to prison 29 years. That did not discredit him with the people that made a difference. Trump could be a martyr with enough people. He certainly has a band of fans.
Well, I take your point, and I don't disagree, but I think that a difference between the imprisonment of Nelson Mandela, who at the time was considered a terrorist, some considered him a freedom fighter, but the difference is that in the United States we have public trials that are on the public record. So I think that, assuming there's a trial somewhere for something that he did, it would be public, it would be on the record, it would hopefully discredit him beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the burden they would have to meet in most cases criminally. And then if he were to go to prison, I think that that the discrediting and the punishment would, for the majority of Americans, serve their purpose. If he was just thrown in prison the way Nelson Mandela was, with a show trial or a secret trial, that would be a totally different thing. I don't think it necessarily applies here.
Okay, I could trust Trump's trial to be public. I think there's a lot of trials in this country that are not so public.
Only if they
people
involve
the money and...
Well, the non-public trials are the portions that are not public. Typically, there's either, as we've been hearing in the news, either an ongoing investigation or it's a national security matter, which is a reason why, for example, Assange has not been charged with espionage. He has not been charged with publishing illegally obtained papers. In order to have a public trial that is not unconstitutional, they have charged him with conspiring to steal the materials, which is a totally different thing from just publishing stolen material.
Oh, I was thinking about the war on drugs and how it's impacted on a lot of people who don't have a lot of money.
Yes, and I think...
I can't be rooting very much for prosecution side on any case. I know the... I do acknowledge the criminal law is at least a necessary evil, but...
Well, criminals, unfortunately, are a necessary evil. They have to be dealt with. You know, I've seen, heard, and experienced enough of the legal system to know it's far from perfect. But as Winston Churchill once said, democracy is the worst system of all, except for all the others.
Yeah.
And our legal system, as imperfect as it is better than most.
Yeah. Well, I got in with a campaign in the 1970s from somebody who seemed to think that the criminal law was a necessary evil at best. He was primarily in decriminalizing marijuana. I was primarily interested in decriminalizing gay sex.
Well, you know, you think back in history, and a lot of crimes used to be capital crimes, so we've come a long way from that.
Yeah, I think it was that way in the days of William Blackstone.
Well, back in Roman times, driving illegally in a pedestrian area was a death sentence. So you see, we've come a long way. Now it's a ticket. But in any case, okay, I appreciate your calling, Scott. Anything you want to wrap up?
I think I'm finished. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for calling, Scott.
Bye.
Okay, we've got open lines, 713-526-5738. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can follow KPFT at kpft.org. You can listen to shows live online from literally anywhere in the world. You can go to the archives. You can read the news about what's going on at the station with various hosts and shows and events that we're co-sponsoring. You can also go to my website, thinkwingradio.com, where I always publish the notes that I'm going to use for the show with links to the articles that I can only refer to cursorily. You can follow me on Twitter at Thinkwing Radio, and I also have a Facebook page, which amazingly is called Thinkwing Radio. I was listening on the way in. Now they have Brad Friedman syndicated to KPFT. He's a very smart guy, knows his stuff. I've spoken with him. I've interviewed him a couple of times. He is a show to listen to. If you're going to listen to a lead-in to my show, listen to Brad. They were talking about elections, which is one of his specialties. And my point of view at this point, first of all, voter fraud, by every metric, is not a problem. Election fraud, whether it's done by officials or hackers, election fraud is where the potential problems are. In my opinion, paper ballots are the only... let's put it this way. Paper ballots are the safest way to vote. They're the hardest to tamper with in an invisible way. I don't like touch screens. I'm not that thrilled with electronic counts of paper ballots. I think it's important to note that in today's society, we think of faster and better and computers being able to do a better job, faster counts, faster results. I can know within 12 hours what the election results are. But we have to remember there are some things where faster is not better. Elections are one of those things where accuracy matters more than speed and convenience. So I'm not necessarily against a paper count, an optical count of paper ballots, but I think that has to be backed up by a significant hand count, either completely or statistically randomly, in order to verify an optical count. I think maybe we also need to loosen the standards for an automatic recount. In many places, it's 0.5%. And I think that you have a lot of elections that are just outside either the 0.5% margin or the 1% margin. And I'm not going to say that that's suspicious. Sometimes it is. But I think being that close to a borderline for an automatic recount, at some point we should just be able to override a hard and fast rule and say, you know what, it's close enough to have an automatic hand recount of a paper ballot trail. Just my point of view here. Okay, next up is Greg. Greg, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. How you doing?
Oh, I'm glad to do it. I haven't talked to you in a while. I just wanted to kind of drop in. I was listening to what you had to say about the Democratic contest for 2020, and I agree with a lot of what you said, because I think what will happen, because you have as many candidates as you do, you'll get a lot of different ideas, a lot of different policy positions, and you will have a full-throated debate over a lot of the issues that a lot of Americans may feel haven't really fully been aired out or discussed.
Or even thought about. I think you're seeing a lot of that this far ahead of the first primary.
And I think, I don't know if you saw MSNBC over the weekend, but they did a thing with Al Sharpton to talk about, you know, people of color and minorities in this election cycle. And
they have perspectives no white person can have.
It is. It's one of the best things that can happen with this, is if you get people engaged, particularly younger people who are millennials and even under that, who are probably going to be voting for the first time, to ask hard questions about what they expect in the, for themselves and the country, and what they want for this generation coming up. What do they want to have in terms of the economy, job creation, prosperity, and how you can make the economy equitable for everybody? You're never going to make it perfect, but you know, I think that's probably one of the best things that can happen. And you were talking about the NRA a few minutes ago.
Yes.
With President Trump yelling and screaming about them.
That it's an illegal investigation.
Well, you kind of covered some of it, but I'll make it brief.
Okay.
If many of you don't know, the reason the NRA is kind of having this food fight is probably over the last few years in particular is about their fundraising and how much they've been spending, not only in fundraising, but as an organization.
As a politically involved organization, which immediately sort of borders you on not being a tax exempt.
Right. And so that's what the food fight, if you want to call it that, debate, if you want to
call
it
that.
Why don't
we call it a gunfight?
And over the weekend, if you didn't know, Oliver North, who had been their president, was asked to resign because he's been one of the ones, among others, within the organization to raise questions about the amounts of money that they've been spending and where it's been going.
Boy, what kind of a world do we live in when Oliver North is the hero?
Well, I mean, it's...
We're living in an age of anti-heroes. You know, I've been wondering...
And I really think people need to ask themselves about, I forget, Mike, about the blog site that kind of deals, I think it's similar to ProPublica, but their whole thing is about the gun issue, the gun lobby, and they were the ones that talked to people within the NRA who no longer work there about the amounts of money that they were spending. They even had, like, public records requests that explained where a lot of the money that even large donors, as individuals or corporations, have been giving, were going.
Well, I think the Maria Butina thing has opened a lot of eyes and a lot of investigative roots.
And like I said, I think, you know, the best thing that can happen in this election cycle is that you have an open, honest, full-throated debate, And when you come at the end of it, whoever the nominee for the Democratic Party will be, that means they will have been tested. They will have been given every opportunity to talk about issues like you've said and I've said, even among my friends, that have never really been fully addressed or thought about with the average person.
Yep.
And I think that's going to be better for everybody, because if you have a full, expansive debate and discussion and campaign, you get to be able to see, okay, who's ready for this?
And I think you framed a good point. I think that most political debates, policy questions, are addressed to potential voters, let's say over 22 or 25 years old, people that are in the workforce, maybe thinking of buying a home, maybe thinking of forming a family. But voting age is 18. And between 18 and 22, your considerations of what makes a candidate or even just voting an appealing prospect, your concerns are way different. You know, their grades and summer jobs and internships and whether they're paid or unpaid and how you're going to deal with college debt. It's a whole different range of concerns that if you want them to vote, you need to have a way of addressing.
And one of the points that was raised on the thing that Al Sharpton had over the weekend in MSNBC Saturday by one of the panelists, the more than half the people who voted, especially in the African-American community, were in their 20s and up. These are like the millennials and under, because this is probably the first election that they've either had a hand in voting in 18 or they'll have a hand in voting in 2020. And they sort of say, hey, look at us. We're out here trying to make ends meet. We want to find out what happens in this economy. We want to happen with what's going on, and we want to see what's happening in 2021 and 2022 and beyond that.
And it's also important to note that an 18-year-old voter in the next presidential election will have been a 14-year-old person in the last election.
Okay. And that's the important thing that we have to discuss as a country and as a society. And if we do that, then everybody will be ready for it.
Yeah, I think that you touch on and bring up a lot of good points, and I appreciate that.
Well, that's, you know, I hope it, as a 6-year-old, I've thought about it, so you know, I kind of see what these young people are up against, so it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, I think, though, that we're going to end up with a really good candidate with some really good and new ways of looking at policy issues. So I think we may be very, very fortunate out of this one.
That's probably going to be the best thing that could happen.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. Next up is M.O.D. Hey, M.O.D.,
hello.
You're on the air. How you doing?
Happy afternoon.
Happy afternoon to you.
Well, all right. Cool. Hey, I promised I would give you a little background to my silly stuff I mentioned about what's called A or R-A-N-D. Rand Corporation.
Oh, Rand, yeah, okay, Rand, they're a think tank.
Yeah, they've been around for a while.
They've been around for at least 50 years that I know of.
Yeah, this guy, a couple guys, I'm looking at their books. One's called Pentagon's Brain. Andy Jacobson wrote this book, and then another guy named Alex Bella, Soldiers of Treason, Rand Corporation. So just taking the highlights from... It's really neat, man. Yeah, this marrying of intelligence in our government and these wars, Mike, like Vietnam and such, to cinema. Well, we talked about Roddenberry, whatever, Star Trek.
Gene Roddenberry, yeah.
Yeah. So these guys...
Let me ask you a question. It sounds like you're outside. If you're in a car, maybe, can you close your window?
Yeah, let me go ahead and pull over. So I'll get over here in a second, Mike.
Okay.
But basically the thrust of these guys' books, or most of them from Jacobson's, is the means for full spectrum dominance for the Fortune 100 companies. The art of war. That delivered models of maintaining both communism and capitalism concurrently. The Vietnam Phoenix Program. No, I think I might have mentioned that one to you before, right?
I'm sorry, that last sentence, I wasn't able to quite understand it.
You remember the Phoenix program I mentioned to you?
Yeah,
prior?
The intelligence program, the software.
Well, so Rand Corporation managed the Vietnam War for the U.S. government.
Well, managed is a strong word, maybe advised.
Yeah, they create these things called fusion centers. And they basically use those fusion centers in both South and North Vietnam to interrogate and torture and murder the Vietnamese. And that process, the term Viet Cong was created.
I'm not sure that that's documented.
Yeah, I'm reading some of these guys' books. That's from many books, actually. And it's documented, but it's not something that's, you know, mentioned because, you know, war is hell. But the productization of our intelligence and war or military is married with these intelligence companies. And it's really neat. I can go through the list here.
Well, MOD, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you one more minute because the connection is kind of bad and it's hard to follow you a little bit. So I'm going to give you 1 minute and then I'm going to have to let you go.
Yeah, no worries. So anyway, just let me go through this thing here. They financed Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove movie.
Mm-hmm. Financed, you said?
Okay, repeat that, Mike.
They financed Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah, so the cinema thing I was trying to explain to you before is our intelligence is married with cinema, and they make, national movies like, you know, Dark 30 and, all these movies of late, you know, Paris, 7 to 11, Paris, whatever, about these movies have the involvement, not full agreement or full, you know, it's like you want to use this warship, you got to, you know, edit a scene a certain way. So the marrying of intelligence, U.S. intelligence, with America's cinema has been around since the 60s.
Well, I'm going to cut you off there, and I'm going to make one comment, if I may, and then I'm going to let you go.
Well, let me say this real quick, then. So what I want to do is make sure that if your listeners can check for themselves, it's called technocracy.news. That's a domain, not com or net, but news. Technocracy.news.
Okay.
If they take a look at that, it will show where we are right now with a lot of stuff, okay?
Okay. All right. I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you calling. Bye. On what MOD was saying, I've taken a position for years that one of the biggest problems we have in terms of our popular memory of history is fictionalized movies of real events that have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes. I once saw a movie where it was an old movie from like the 30s or 40s, where one of the screen titles before the main story began was, "This isn't the way it happened, but it should be." And I think that that's a great way to preface a movie based on real events, where they have fictionalized individual stories and fictionalized conversations, even fictionalized outcomes, added and subtracted characters. You know, that isn't history. But people being who they are, and I'm not going to exempt myself on this, movies shape your idea of history regardless of what you have learned in school, which may itself be occasionally debatable. So I have a problem with docudramas, just on principle. So agreeing in that sense with MOD, I actually avoid docudramas unless I really feel like I know what the facts are, and that way the dramatizations and fictionalizations don't impact me, but that's not true for most folks. So you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. You are listening to kpft.org. If you're listening online, you can listen anywhere in the world. You can also go there and occasionally give us money, which we appreciate very much, and learn about shows and schedules and listen to archived programming, and it's a great place to visit. My site is thinkwingradio.com, at thinkwingradio on Twitter, and thinkwingradio on Facebook, so I'm just kind of all over the frickin' place. Okay, Gary, you're on the air. How you doing?
What's up, Mike? Doing okay?
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. What's going on with you?
Still working?
Yeah, in a manner of speaking, sure.
Well, look, I want to apologize. I missed the first few minutes of your intro because my radio was crapping out. And I did you mention or have you heard about George Conway's hashtag?
I have heard about it. What is it?
It's called Deranged Donald.
Yeah, I have heard about it.
Deranged Donald. And they had a story in the Washington Post because it's gotten like millions of hits, including, you know, lots of celebrities. Mia Farrow, Mark Hamill from Star Wars, all these famous people, and everybody is like, you know, we're not alone out here. And so that's the new, I would have said Despicable Donald, but it was
I like the alliteration.
And, apparently it's going around. You know who Conway is?
Yep.
And his kind of marital...
Kellyanne's husband. That must be a happy marriage.
Going on there. But Deranged Donald.
I think it's interesting. Conservatives seem to be very, very into that stuff, which is why those nicknames persist. Liberals, progressives, it's hard to get something like that to stick because
well,
it's so second grade.
Why that is, and that has to do with most of us leave our conservative understanding of the world behind after like sixth, seventh grade, okay? And we grow up and we learn and we educate ourselves and meet lots of people. If you're a little schoolyard bully, that's about as far as you get. Okay?
Well, I don't think that's an entirely fair characterization. I think it has to do with a lot of factors, including, according to some studies, to some extent, neurology. But it also has to do with home environment. It has to do with early socialization. It has to do with how parochial your experience is, like people who brag they've never been outside of Texas or Louisiana. I mean, I think it's one of the better arguments for mandatory national service, where people get a chance to contribute to society, they go into national service, and they get to meet people from all kinds of other places and broaden their perspective. And I think that that's one way to combat regionalism and parochialism.
So this applies not only to politics, but to religion as well. You know, what your parents brainwashed you with, and you kind of... find it impossible to let go the rest of your life. You know, I mean, you may be kind of suspicious of some things, but it takes a lot of guts to be an atheist, I'll tell you that.
10% of the population claims to be atheists.
But it's not our fault. See what?
Which is a larger population than Jews, I might add. Jews are only like 3%, and 10% of the population is atheists. So
you learn your faith in God in the infantile pre-verbal state. That's when, like, Conrad Lorenz, the great ethologist, explained what imprinting is when he did his duck experiment, where he had a little duck, and it followed the first thing they see is mama, and his mama was an orange balloon, and even when its real mama was there, it would follow the orange balloon.
Yeah, that's kind of cruel, but
the pre-verbal experience, before you know who you are, what you are, where you are, or why you are, you know that when you're hungry, somebody feeds you, and when you're cold, someone wraps you in a blanket, and when you're afraid, someone holds you.
I believe that what most people consider the good old days, and the good old days is always kind of a rolling time frame, right? I think the good old days in most people's minds, although this isn't how they think of it, is before they had to take care of themselves in the adult world. The good old days was I went to school, I did homework, I ate in the lunchroom, I didn't have to pay bills, mom and dad took care of that. I didn't have to do laundry in many cases, mom and dad took care of that. I didn't have to buy food, mom and dad took care of that. And I think that when most people think of the good old days, they're not thinking of the good old days when they were 30. They're thinking of the good old days before they turned 20.
And that may be right, and back when you could understand things and weren't complicated by the facts, as we grow in an evolving world and learned, oh, there's more than one country, oh, there's more than one religion, oh, there's more than one state. I thought Texas was it.
Until I was about, I've said this before on the air, until I was about 8 years old, I really thought that there were only four ethnic groups in the world. There were Jews, Italians, blacks, and Puerto Ricans. And that was my universe until I was about 6 or 8 years old. I will also say one more thing, and then I'll let you go, but I appreciate your giving me the opportunity to say it.
Well, check out George Conway and go ahead.
Okay. I once saw a news report. There had been a tornado that had torn up a mobile home park, because it seems like that's what tornadoes aim at. And there was this little girl who was probably about 4 or 5 years old, and she was being interviewed. Her mother was holding her. Nobody had been hurt, thank goodness. And the little girl, her way of understanding what had happened, and her mother and the reporter thought it was hilarious. I actually think that it's a way some religions form. She said, what happened was a giant elephant came down from the sky and squashed our home. That was her comprehension of a tornado that had ripped apart her neighborhood. And to me, that was so revealing about human nature. Trying to understand things beyond comprehension. She's too young to have gone to school and learned about wind speeds and cross currents. All she knew is something big like an elephant had come down and crushed her home. I thought that was very revealing.
Well, if you think about it, when they used to believe that the sun went around the earth, it was perfect logic. There were no satellites. There were no telescopes. That's why Galileo was a heretic. That's why Einstein was a heretic. That's why Darwin was a heretic.
Well, it was kind of observationally accurate for the time, right?
It was common sense. The earth is flat. I see that sun come up over there, and it goes over the sky and comes down.
And it's got to go somewhere underneath during some of that time.
But we have evolved, and those, like, I won't mention Mitch McConnell's name.
Well, I'm glad you didn't mention it.
They cannot let go of what they understand the world to be. And I'm sorry you're about 40 years late, son.
Well, I'm going to have to let you go.
They were debating, you know, asking the Google people why their iPhone was priced so much. Mm. And this is our Congress trying to understand the technology today. Good luck. They should all just turn in their cars and buy wagons. And
okay, hold. I appreciate your calling, Gary. I got to let you go. Thank you so much. Okay, we do have open lines. The number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. It is open forum, so even though we're talking about stuff, if you have something else you want to contribute, that's okay, too. And next up is Karma, and thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, no problem. I would like to know how many open-minded people that listen to this radio program, including yourself, would look at the possibility of a polar shift going on with the Earth.
Now, are you talking about migration of the North Pole, or are you talking about nutating of the axis?
I'm talking about probably both.
Okay.
But nonetheless, could you, and I'm sure that there are university professors and people that are in their respective professions that would be more than happy to be interviewed to share with everyone listening, that what we're being rammed down our throats about global warming is really a polar shift. Now, it just so happens that I had a neighbor who was a geologist, and he had told me that this is what has been going on, that you know, the fresh, flash, frozen woolly mammoth that had been dug out of the, what was it, the Arctic?
Siberia, maybe,
Siberia,
or the Arctic, somewhere around there.
With the jungle foliage in the elephant's mouth.
Yes.
That it was a fresh, flash, frozen issue where the Earth had actually shifted. And it is not unheard of that the Earth has shifted 180 degrees at one time.
Well, now,
so would you please, I'll hang up and listen,
okay.
But would you please entertain the idea of talking with some geologists and some people that will tell you exactly what is going on with the Earth, so this way we can abate the situation that we've got to put plugs in the back of our cows so they don't create flatulence. You know, it's ridiculous.
I'm going to ask you, do you believe that global climate, which is different from weather, is changing?
with the Earth shifting?
No. I just want to.
But you see, it's
hold on. I want to ask karma.
For living and breathing in oxygen and breathing out carbon dioxide.
But that's part.
It's totally ridiculous, this whole thing. And I wish that there would be more listeners that could. You know, and I know you guys are out there that are professional.
All right, karma, you're not listening.
Call into this
karma. All right, I'm going to have to let you go because you don't want to have a conversation. All right, I'm so sorry. All right, listen, karma, here's the thing. I wanted to ask you if you believed in climate change, because if you believe in climate change, it doesn't matter how much of it is human-caused and how much of it is caused by orbital variation, axial variation, magnetic pole changes. I mean, it doesn't matter what the reason is. We have to figure out, A, how to cope with it, and B, if possible, how to mitigate it. All this garbage about we have to put plugs in the anuses of cows. Here's the thing. The Earth has certain natural cycles. It has a hydrological cycle. Water evaporates, goes up, rains, snows, sleets, comes down. Where this happens changes, how much it happens changes, but there is a normal hydrological cycle. You take something like fracking that uses extant surface water or groundwater that is then injected thousands of feet into the ground where it never re-enters the hydrological cycle. That is unnatural. When you talk about carbon, there is a carbon cycle. Things grow, they die, they decompose, things get digested like cows and people, and methane is emitted from living things. It's one of the signs of life on a planet. But that's also part of a natural carbon cycle. It's emitted, it's recycled. It's emitted, it's recycled. The problem we're having is the carbon we are adding to the air that is not a natural part of the carbon cycle. It's the stuff we drill. It's the stuff we pump. It's the stuff we dig up that has been out of the carbon cycle for hundreds of thousands or millions of years, such as coal and peat. So it's not a matter of cows. Cows ingest living matter, and they emit methane, and the methane breaks down naturally in the environment and becomes its component elements or recombines with other things. It's the stuff that's not natural to the carbon cycle, and in the case of fracking, the stuff that's not natural to the hydrological cycle that becomes the problems. But anyway, so there's that. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is our base website, and you can follow the station there. You can contribute. We rely on your contributions to stay on the air. Right before me is Brad Friedman. He's great. Listen to him. We have other programs in this time slot, Egberto Willis. We disagree on a lot of stuff, but he's always interesting to listen to. A very activist person. We have some good programming on around the 2 to 4 time slot during the week. And, of course, music. My website is thinkwingradio.com. On Twitter at Think Wing Radio, on Facebook, Think Wing Radio. There's a theme there. We have open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. And Ted, you're on the air. How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Okay. What's going on?
Well, you had a caller talking about how a lot of conservatives aren't too bright, but
I don't agree with that necessarily.
I think Mitch McConnell and his ilk—they're bright enough.
Yep.
It's just they use the ignorant.
They're evil geniuses. They're evil geniuses. They're like super villains.
Yeah, I don't think that McConnell believes that Obamacare was evil. I just think he used that as a way to defeat Democrats. He didn't care if people got health care or not.
Well, I'm not sure if he didn't care. I think he actually didn't want people to get health care in the way that Obamacare, the ACA, was getting it for them. He has other priorities and other means. And, you know, to him, I'm not going to put myself in McConnell's head. I think that to some extent he seems to act like the ends always justify the means. He has certain goals. He doesn't care how he achieves them, which is, they're not necessarily unconstitutional, but they're certainly not in the spirit of the law and the Constitution. And yeah,
well,
you're right.
Violated norms.
Yeah. I mean, conservatives, you're right. Conservatives are not necessarily stupid. They're just different.
I don't know. I think that the vast majority of the rank and file is tend to be, I mean, I've never met one that seems to know what he's talking about, you know?
Well, they have a skewed vision of the world.
And, you know, they deny basic facts, global warming. It's just so provable.
Yeah. Do you know that one of the ways to see climate change is to look at paintings of, for example, Venice that were done several hundred years ago? And many of the buildings in those paintings still exist. And you can see where the water line was in the paintings, and then look at the water line as it exists today. And in many cases, that water line has gone up an entire story and covered like the first floor of the buildings that were painted at that time. So, you know, we're definitely in a post-ice age era. It's only a matter of how much is human caused and how much is natural. And beyond that, it doesn't matter. We have to cope with it. And to the extent we can, we have to mitigate it. So the whole debate to me is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, I was wondering, I think Trump, on the other hand, I think he's really kind of dim. I really think he believes it. What he says.
Trump is the worst kind of person in this sense. He's a stupid person who thinks he's smart. Those are the most dangerous people. You know, there's a saying, and a lot of you may be offended by this, and I apologize for that, but it is a joke that is sometimes told, that those of you who think you know everything really annoy those of us who do. Trump is a person who thinks he knows everything, and he thinks he's great at everything, and he thinks anybody who investigates him is breaking the law because you can't investigate him. I mean, he has a very, very messed up view of himself and his relationship to the planet. He is a stupid person that thinks he's smart, and that is dangerous.
Yeah.
Okay, Ted, do you have anything else you want to wrap up, or should I let you go?
No, that's about it.
Okay.
I just wanted to see what you thought about them manipulating people.
Yeah, well, I don't love it. All right, thanks for calling, Ted.
Bye.
Take care. All right, next up is Tom. Tom, you're on the air. How you doing today?
Hey, is that me, Tom? Can you hear
that
me?
That is you, Tom.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. I wonder if we can get the volume up a little bit.
Oh, gosh. You know, I'll have to get the... Is that better?
Yes, that is better. I think between you and Naboo, I think we got that taken care of. So what's on your mind?
Well, I'm a little frightened, actually, to get in the conversation because I'm still kind of on the fence about climate change. So I wanted to ask you a couple things.
Sure.
Can you tell me some of the studies that you've looked over that you think are the... most reasonable that I could check out that would offer the best evidence for this?
I wish I could. I mean, I have not read studies. I occasionally see abstracts of studies.
I'm sorry, but did you say you have not?
I have not physically read climate studies.
So where are you getting your info from?
I take a preponderance of the evidence from sources that I consider reliable, and I read a lot of different sources, and I have a certain amount of anecdotal evidence as well.
All right, so basically you're talking about people with sources you're reliable, like experts or scientists, am I right?
Yeah, more or less.
Okay, just name me two or three of the scientists I can maybe check out their information.
I cannot give you names of people that you can check out. I can tell you to search them.
Okay, but weren't you're kind of... I'm listening to the whole show, and it seems like you're really, really certain about all this stuff. I'm just imagining the specific info that you got and where you got it from to make you so certain of it, because I'm kind of, like I said, I'm kind of on the fence here.
Okay. Can you tell me any names or studies that you have read about perturbations in the Earth's orbit around the sun?
You help me out. Yeah, what are we talking about?
No. I'm asking you the question now. Have you read any of those studies?
I am interested in getting information.
Okay. If you want to take it from that point of view, we can have a conversation. If all you want to do is ask me all the studies I have not physically read, I'll have to admit I have not read the studies.
Well, but that's okay, but I just think, so where are you getting information that's giving you such a conviction about?
Let's put it this way. I'm going to preface it with, nobody can make an in-depth study of everything in order to verify what is considered to be established knowledge. Nobody can do that. So let's start with that.
You're saying there's established knowledge, but...
Hold on. So, what I do, and what I recommend other people do, is read a broad variety of sources, which is not hard to do on the Internet now. There are news compilation sites all over the place. But I don't read sites like Fox. Now, Fox is great on technology coverage, by the way. The political coverage is the problem. I don't read Fox for political news. I don't read Iranian news. I do read BBC. I do actually even look sometimes at Chinese Xinhua, because while they're pro-China, I haven't caught them in a big lie. So you have to learn sources that are trustable and verifiable.
So what is about the Chinese Xinhua? What are they saying specifically about the carbons and everything in the climate and the air?
Well, I will tell you that they take climate pollution increasingly seriously, that they are trying very hard to close down their coal plants and switching to solar and renewable. They put very, very heavy taxes on gasoline and motor vehicles because they don't want the emissions. So they know there's something going on there.
Okay, so basically we're talking about nothing specific we could point to as far as an immediate source I can go to, but I have to look around the web. Is that what we're saying?
I think you have to do what any person who's curious does, which is do some research that satisfies you with reliable sites.
Been asking people who've been giving me their opinion on this, and I've yet to get a name or two I can look up. I appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling. You know, I can't drop names. Now, if you wanted to talk some biological science, I do read my wife's science papers, and I do read some of her colleagues' science papers. How many of us get a chance to do that? You know, at some point, we have to trust sources. And that's why it's so important to question the verifiability of what you read. And you can only do that by comparing notes. If you have significant discrepancies between two sites as to the facts, and you know, there's a saying that you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. You can interpret facts different ways, but facts are facts. You have to find sources that you feel are factually reliable and then form your opinions. That's all I can say. Nobody can investigate everything in depth, understand the mechanism, let's say, for lighting a fire. I wonder how many people can actually tell you the physics behind that. Have they read papers? Can they name anybody? I know, it's awkward. Okay, next up is Larry. Larry, you're on the
Hello.
Air. How you doing?
Yeah. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Okay, what's going on?
I got a quick Trump question.
Okay.
And I'd like the kind of people to think about this. If we could possibly look at Donald Trump as a stress test.
For our institutions.
I'm sorry?
For our institutions, for our constitutional process.
Yeah. Do you think that he has identified some possible weaknesses in our democracy, in our government, that might need to be addressed so that no one could ever abuse our government and our democracy as he has done?
I think
something
there's
that we might need to look in the future and maybe say, hey, we might need to take care of that, because we've never thought about anybody coming in and doing what he's doing.
I think that there are an enormous number of things that will need to be done. Whether they'll get done is another question. But I think there are an enormous number of laws and policies that are going to have to be changed and clarified. I think it's obvious that for the last couple of hundred years, we've mostly relied on the good judgment of the people elected.
Right.
And it appears that we can't always do that. And that's
right.
A shame, because it's very hard to specifically regulate many of these things. You have a representative democracy, so that you rely then on your representatives to make smart, deliberative decisions.
Exactly.
Because the popular plebiscite is not always the best way to decide things, and in a big population gets really, really challenging. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff, and I think it's going to be very hard, and I'm not sure how much of it will get passed, but I think there are going to be some laws, regulations, and maybe constitutional amendments that are really going to have to be looked at hard.
Right, because I think Donald Trump could be put in the category of, we don't know what hit us.
Donald Trump is a virus to our constitutional democracy,
exactly.
And we're going to need to inoculate against future instances. I'm going to have to let you go, James. I want to get one more caller before I have to call it a day. Thanks so much for calling. Take care.
All right.
Okay, James, you've got literally a minute, so I'm just going to let you
minute.
Talk.
Yep. Okay, quick. Republicans and Democrats, I believe they're both good. They're good people. And what it is, I believe, is that it's about politics. And we as American people, we identify with our politics. The Democrats and the Republicans, it takes a democratic system to work. It takes politics.
It takes compromise.
It takes politics. And our politics have been compromised by wealthy people who is taking advantage of the ignorance of the people who don't know what they are or have the opportunity to have gained. It's a weapon. If any enemy will use, take advantage of ignorance.
Yep.
Even if religion is just an attack on ignorance. It's put it like this, it's being attacked through ignorance. So basically, if we don't learn how to, don't allow ourselves to get knowledge and understanding, then we're going to always be the losers.
I'm going to have to let you go, James. I appreciate your call, but I got to let you go on that note. I got about 35 seconds. Okay, thank you so much for calling, James. Thank you, everybody, for calling. I appreciate the thoughtfulness and even the awkwardness. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. KPFT.org is how you find this show and many, many others, as well as our archive, and listen online anytime, anywhere in the world. My parting quote, "This too shall pass," goes back to ancient Persia. This too shall pass. Everybody have a good week. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Where freedom rings and singers sing. Where Robert Earl Keane meets Martin Luther King. From jazz, justice, peace and rap. R&B, sports, blues and comedy. From heavy metal standing hand in hand with our chants. We shall not be silenced by fearmongers and sycophants. The place where your neighbor is on your airwaves. A true community. Celebrating diversity in thought, music, and love, where your stories are told in unison. The most loving words that we can say, and we say it so bold. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. Welcome home.
Human trafficking is modern-day slavery, and it happens in our own communities. Victims can be any gender, age, or race. Join the Department of Homeland Security's Blue Campaign to learn how to recognize and report this heinous crime. Visit our website at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. That's www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. Your second look could be their second chance. KPFT Houston. Thank you.